My name is Adrian. I'm from Romania, and I want to make a movie with you.
I saw you in Dark Knight Rises, and you're my actress. This is a film I'm making right now to convince you to come here and make that movie with me.
I even convinced 3 Romanian actresses to play in this film to show you how I'm gonna work with you on Be My Cat.
The actress needs to be skinny.
And I'm not skinny enough for you.
No.
Don't touch me!
They don't know. I lied to them.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Real Talk, a movie podcast, where we want to be your go-to source for ratings and recommendations of past and present films. I am your host, Wes Jones, podcasting from Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Hey, this is Tommy, podcasting straight from Nashville, Tennessee.
The movie buddy Conway, podcasting from Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Hello, Real Talk community. Wes Jones here, and you're listening to part 2 and the conclusion of our in-depth interview with Adrian Toffay. We left you on a bit of a cliffhanger last time, so we'll pick the interview up right where we left off. If you like what you hear and you want to support Adrian in his future projects, he has a Patreon account which has basically been essential to his survival as an independent filmmaker. We've listed that information in the show notes. Also wanted to take a second to update you on what's going on with Real Talk. Up next is episode 9, titled My Favorite Western, with special guest host Dave Dr. Shock Becker from DVDinfatuation.com. Each of us are going to feature review our all-time favorite Western, so you'll get 4 classic Western movie reviews, plus a theme discussion on the Western genre. Next, we'll be talking with writer, director, and producer Gino Alfonso, who is involved in all kinds of things, including his upcoming feature-length film, Compatible. And finally, Discovery Channel's Shark Week is right around the corner, and we want to get you prepared for that with a shark-themed episode. As always, thanks for listening. What's your favorite scene?
Burning question that everybody has is, since this a film within a film is a proof of concept where you're trying to persuade Anne Hathaway to come and star in your movie. Everybody wonders, now that it's 5 years later, has Anne Hathaway seen this film and has she agreed to be your cat?
Yes.
Okay, good one. Okay. Wow. Well. Yeah, there is a story. The short answer is I don't know if Anne Hathaway. But there is a slightly longer story which actually has to do with Anne Hathaway and with her manager, literally, and related to this project and all that. So yeah, the first thing that I did at some point, I tagged Anne Hathaway in some of the posts. You know, I was like dreaming this thing, like thinking, oh, what if she literally goes to a what if she literally is informed by her manager or whoever manages her Facebook page, you know, or something like that, because probably she doesn't have the time to check who's tagging her page on Facebook or stuff. I still try my luck, thinking maybe she goes to an interview, to a, I don't know, like those talk shows they have, you know, and all of a sudden she says something like, oh, by the way, like, so interesting, like this crazy guy in Romania did a movie about me, you know, it was so creepy. And even her saying something like that, you can imagine that would have helped so much the movie, you know, like huge. Like I would have found distributor, I would have recovered the budget like in an instant and probably even get another job from Blumhouse or something. And so that didn't happen. So at some point I messaged her team, like the manager or something like that, and asked if I forgot what, if I can use her name in the movie or something like that. Like, but actually, you know why I did it? I didn't want to, I think I did it kind of indirectly hoping that at least this way they will learn about the movie, you know, because like without saying like, hey, are you aware of it? No, kind of finding my way for them to learn about it. And interestingly, this is like the secondary story. So interesting and tragic at the same time for me, but interesting at the same time. So me and my wife, at some point, we were contacted by a producer from Italy, Andrea Corbella was his name. He said like he's working with this Hollywood production company, Entertainment 360, which is managed, managed by literally by Anne Hathaway's manager, Susan Bimal, you know. And he said like he heard about my movie and stuff like that, and he was interested in doing in having somebody to help with a production that was supposed to be shot in Romania as well. And they were looking for some feedback from, not some help, you know. And so little by little, I ended up not only helping him with that thing, but actually taking over the entire film project. So me and my wife started working on the script, on the production plans, directing plans, everything for 2 years, you know. And in the end, when we realized that the guy is not paying us for all the work and everything like that we did, we called the actual studio in LA and they said they never heard of him. Oh, this guy was like this incredible scam artist, you know, that practically did a lot of fake contracts, fake signatures. He was invited, there are even pictures of him, unbelievable, on the internet, to festivals in Brazil, like articles in the newspaper, him talking about bringing new productions with Anne Hathaway in Brazil. He was invited, he attended the Cannes Film Festival with official badge as representing that studio in Hollywood. Like, such wow. An extended scam, unbelievable. And
that dude needs to be your next cat, Adrian.
Yeah, absolutely.
yeah. So he really, really effed up our life, me and my wife's. Like, it was horrible because we worked so much on that thing, you know. We even postponed our own project. We put the word to sleep, my next movie. We haven't been paid. So yeah, horrible. But I found this thing kind of interesting, you know, because I actually ended up discussing with the assistant of Anne Hathaway's manager about this issue, you know, and there were some legal things involved because I made the complaint to the prosecutors in Romania. They also had this type of investigator in the US. So yeah, that's an interesting stuff, how things evolved. I was hoping when this guy contacted me, I was hoping for even more, you know, thinking like, wow, I did a movie, Be My Cat, a film for Anne, and actually brought me a Hollywood production that has connection with Anne Hathaway somehow. It didn't happen this way, but yeah. So I don't know. Like, I don't know. I think there is a good chance that she might have heard of the, so her team definitely knows about it.
Mm-hmm. I would say she has definitely heard about it by now.
Yeah,
and of course, that's what we're doing today. We're trying to get your work out there to more people because we all enjoyed it so much. And so if she hasn't, even though I think she has, she will eventually find out about it. And I would love for her to make some kind of statement or something on it, because I think everybody that sees it all feels the same way. They're like, what in the heck does Anne Hathaway think about
this?
Yes,
I know. Do you think at some point she might... Because I think I'm too little. I think the movie is too indie, too underground for her to say something. Don't you think so?
It depends.
I personally think she's a closet fan of the movie. I think she's directing a movie called Be My Dog, a film for Adrian Tofay. I think she's got three unknowing guy actors in it. I'm sorry, not actresses. And I think you should be scared because you look just like him. But I have a real question. How did you land on Anne Hathaway?
Ah, yeah. So thing is this. Well, as I said, I did a theater show in which there was this guy obsessed with an actress. And while I was on stage, when I said that, oh, and I kidnapped this girl, this actress, I actually used the name of a real theater Romanian actress, you know, for more impact. There was even a little scandal in Romania. Like some people thought I'm literally obsessed with that actress or something like that. But that was actually just for the show. There was no obsession involved. Doing that. Since I adapted kind of my character for the movie, I thought, hey, like, this has to be a real actress as well. And has to be one that is known by everybody, so that everybody will empathize, will know what I'm talking about in this film. Needs to be this worldwide known celebrity. And then I thought, okay, she also has to have something to do with cats, you know? There wasn't even an alternative title initially for the movie. I think it was called Black Skin Tight Pants or something like that. I was having other things in mind. And also there was a different concept for the film initially, which later was changed because one of the actors left production. And I thought, okay, since he left, I'm not going to replace him because he was kind of crucial, this actor, to the concept. So then I changed the concept entirely. And it was good. It's good that I did this way. The initial concept involved something more also a different story, but in terms of the cat thing involved, like, literally, like, taking girls and taking their nails out and replacing them with cat claws or something like a more graphic thing. Mm-hmm. Like a more graphic transformation. Yeah, anyway, so it has to be some worldwide known celebrity, that real one that has something to do with cats. So around that time, I just happened to watch, I don't think it was The Dark Knight Rises. I think it was first Les Miserables. So I was so much impressed with her acting in, with Anne Hathaway's acting in Les Miserables. So, and then I watched The Dark Knight Rises and I saw her being the Catwoman. And I thought, okay, this can work so well. Mm. Because it has to be in order for me to be more realistic, you know. I mean, it's good in your acting to start from something real, from a real spark within you. But my spark towards her was not sexual in nature or anything the way it is with my character, you know. My spark was like, oh my God, I was so impressed by her acting in Les Miserables. Okay, so then I thought, okay, I can use that impression that she left on me with Les Miserables and kind of put it together, replace it with his obsession for her in Dark Knight Rises, you know, psychologically, you know?
That's so good. That answers my question why it wasn't Halle Berry. Now I know why it was Anne Hathaway instead.
Yeah. 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 And also she did a good role in Dark Knight Rises as well. You know, it's not like, oh, I didn't, but yeah, mostly she impressed me in the other one, you know, and as an actress. And that's how and all these things came together and made Anne Hathaway the choice.
So in the movie, the Adrian character says it's something along the lines of we have to sacrifice our entire life for the movie. And of course that, you know, could mean literally in the movie for the actresses. But then I also immediately thought, I was like, wonder if did he put it in there because he kind of personally feels that way, that, you know, he is literally sacrificing his life for film and for entertainment. And I just wondered if you had even thought about that, or that was just something that would just came to you at the moment, and you said that.
That's the point when I was much more extreme, and I thought, like, okay, since there are two levels here. Yes, it has something of some of reality in that thing. Yeah, like a metaphor or something. Because first thing that I thought this way. Okay, so I'm like this guy from Romania, doesn't have film studies, has only the acting, doesn't have any connections whatsoever, doesn't have the money, doesn't have the right English accent, he is not in the right, it's in Eastern Europe. I mean, Eastern Europe is not, let's say, the best place to become a Hollywood star or whatever. And there are all these kind of obstacles in the way of me all of a sudden becoming a worldwide known filmmaker. Because that's what I was dreaming, you know? So how can I achieve my dream when there are so many obstacles? Like, what I want to reach is there, when I was like literally here, very low. So I thought, okay, it's not enough to do the same efforts as somebody, let's say you are born in a family of actors in LA and you have the money, you have the connections. It's not enough for me to do the same type of efforts, because the gap between where I am and where I want to reach is so big. Therefore, I need to do an equally big sacrifice, you know? So I thought, okay. And the moment I started to think this way, I literally, like, all my life started to be, I didn't have a personal life. I didn't have a friend. I didn't have literally a girlfriend. Like, all my life, 4 years preparing this film and everything, started to be focused only on this, because I thought, rationally, I literally thought that the only way is to compensate for this, to achieve my dreams, to make a very big sacrifice. You know, I didn't think any other way, you know? So yeah, that's the reality of it, actually.
Well, I think that's the difference between, you know, people like me who always, you know, wanted to be a filmmaker, but I never sacrificed. I never truly did the sacrifice, and therefore I'm not. I have a different profession. I'm a podcaster. And then someone like you who is now realizing their dream because of all the sacrifices that, and I know you're still dreaming more and you want to continue to get bigger, but you're on your way.
I like what you said when you said, just do it. When, you know, people are always nervous about whether or not they should make a film, but just do it. Just get out there and start doing it. And you said, you know, your movie, you know, your character, it was better that you just started doing it from scratch and it looked like you didn't know what you were doing. So, you know, that should be an inspiration to people.
And I learned everything while doing it. Like, I learned to edit, like, I never edited a thing in my life, you know. I just downloaded that program, that Premiere Elements, you know. It was not like the Premiere Pro, it was Premiere Elements, you know, because I thought, okay, that Premiere Pro sounded too complicated for me, so I thought I just need something basic. Because I thought, okay, since this guy is making this film, it is like maybe he also edited some of it. I don't know exactly. Anyway, so I just learned everything while doing it, like for months and months and months. The worst. I want to get back to the sacrifice thing, because I said there were two parts about the idea of sacrifice. So first, this type of sacrifice I did, and second, it's something that comes from acting, you know, because I did this type of acting school, in which our teachers always told us, like, if you want to, don't act, you know, like, it needs to be real. If you act, if you lie, if you pretend, the audience will feel that you are lying to them, and they will not empathize with whatever you are saying, whatever you are doing them. So you need to create the circumstances in your life or whatever during rehearsals that would actually put you on a path of actually things happening for real, like a parallel reality, you know. So that's what I tried to also, from an acting point of view, I tried to do kind of this sacrifice, you know, to create in my real life certain circumstances that would create this parallel psychological reality for me, this parallel world, you know, in which I was actually this psychopath, you know, like something like that.
And like, that's also a kind of what did you do to create that world?
Well, multiple smaller things. It's some of them are psychological. For example, I'm going to give you an example. For example, how I did this character when I was building the character, but not for the movie, for the theater show. At some point, so this guy, he's obsessed with an actress. Okay. So at some point I went on Facebook and I commented something on an actress's picture, you know, something that was I forgot what it was, you know, but something that was making it obvious that I like her, you know, but without being like too obvious, you know, because, like, you know, not to, or something like that, you know. Or a Or was it a joke? I forgot, something like that. Or was it a commentary about the way the picture looks? Yeah, it was something. I forgot exactly what I did. I forgot exactly what I did. Or actually, it was a criticism. I literally forgot how this process worked. Anyway, I put a commentary or on one of her pictures or something like that. And then she was bothered and she blocked me because of that comment that I did. And what I was doing at that point, I was doing an acting exercise called, I forgot how it's, I don't know how it's called in English, free flow or something like that. Do you know that exercise when you just put your pen on the paper and then you just write, mm-hmm. write whatever, all the images and all the words that come to your mind, you know?
Yeah.
So the moment, but I didn't do that on paper. I did it, I tried to be aware of very well what's happening with me the moment she blocked me. That's very moment. So the moment she blocked me, I realized like, okay, my face is getting red a little bit, you know, because you feel like, oh my God, like somebody blocked you, you know. I was analyzing very well my psychological transformation. It was I was trying to be very aware of my psychological processes. My face was getting a little bit weird. I felt a little bit ashamed. But at the same time, I was trying to find if there is any anger or any resentment towards her. I was trying to identify the resentment in what I felt in that moment. And once I identified the resentment feeling, I tried to magnify it. Okay, I'm not a psychopath, but what if I was a psychopath? What if this guy didn't feel like 1% resentment when he got kind of rejected by somebody on Facebook? What if this guy was a psychopath? What if his resentment was 100% to the point of, fuck, like literally going out of the house and kidnapping that girl because she rejected him on Facebook. So I tried to eliminate. Okay, so then I'm thinking, okay, what filters do I have the education? Is it the education? Is it the genes? The way my mom educated me? The way school educated me? What stops me from doing something, I don't know, to take revenge on her for blocking me or something like that? You know, there are some filters. And then I'm thinking, okay, I need to do two things. One, I need to magnify that feeling. I need to bring that 1% of resentment to be like 90%, okay? And second, I need to remove psychologically the filters from my education, from everything that stops me from doing something extreme. So this is how I created the psychology and the mentality of the character. I just gave you an example.
Hey, Adrian, that's really interesting because I was just thinking about that. First of all, I know I can only speak for myself. I've been blocked many times. So, yeah. You know, it's like, you know, right there, it's like a badge of honor in a lot of ways. And also, that's one thing when I was watching the film, I really got that aspect of what you're just talking about, the psychology of the character. And in America, there's a term called toxic masculinity that's really out there a lot now. It's kind of in the people talk about it all the time. And I thought that the film in a subtle way really speaks to that. And so I think if people watch that, they can really take a lot from that if they really want to kind of get into the psychology of that toxic masculinity. I think that's a really interesting way to kind of look at the film. So I really appreciate that aspect of it.
Well, thank you. It was what I did. And by the way, when I did that experiment, the thing that I just told you with that actress, I actually wrote about it. You know, I actually wrote because I wanted to. In that point, I was so much passionate about exposing the process. How do people really work? I was always disappointed. I was watching, these shows like Actor Studio, you know, De Niro, Pacino, and where they supposedly should talk about the process, but they always talk about just funny stuff. Like I can never really get something professional, you know. From like I would really want to know, for example, okay, what was actually the mental process in details of De Niro working on a certain role, which is something I will never learn. And most actors don't talk about that. So I thought of, okay, let's try to do that. You know, maybe I can inspire. So I actually talked about this, and there was a little bit of a scandal in the acting community in Romania because me writing about that felt like it was misunderstood. It felt as if I how do you say, like, the same way it happened with Be My Cat, for, by the way, sorry, I'm making a parenthesis here. Do you know that in the woods, like in my hometown recently, I talked with somebody and they said, like, oh my God, do you know that, I talked with a guy, do you know that when I was like in high school, that was like 2 years or 1 year ago or something like that, I was in high school, there were these girls or guys, I forgot exactly, and they told me at some point, oh my God, do you know that there is this guy who actually kidnapped these actresses in the woods and he did horrible things to them and all that, like, and I couldn't believe this. It's like people literally,
you're like, that's me.
What?
You're just like, you just want, yeah, that's me.
Oh my God, no, I, like, to me, like, okay, to me, like, found footage was like, people were shocked by found footage back in the days, by Cannibal Holocaust and all that, but today, in this day and age, I wouldn't expect people to think this way. It's so crazy.
It's a movie. There's always that fine line between a movie, art, and real life. And some people still have trouble with that, especially, you know, and that's why I think credit to your film is how well done it is, because there, it does blur that line, but such in a realistic way. And I think that's a credit to the film.
Yeah, thank you. So, I was using this to say that. So before I kind of did the same thing with the theater, you know, using the real name of a real actress. And on top of that, I wrote about the process, you know. And I think that there was a little scandal I was telling you. I think some people really didn't get it. Like, some people really thought that I was obsessed with the actress, or that the comment that I put was like a type of a stalking, cyber stalking, you know? Like, it create a lot of confusion, you know? Like, what is me? What I did? What was the character? Or it was a weird thing, yeah, that those times, yeah. I hope Anne Hathaway doesn't feel this way, that I'm stalking her or whatever.
Adrian,
I did feel weird when I was tagging her, honestly, because I really thought that this can feel weird to those people. They can misunderstand, literally, even at this level. I think even professional people in the industry can misunderstand this and really think that I have an obsession with Anne Hathaway or something like that. Yeah.
Well, Adrian, I'm impressed by the way you intellectualize your work and how you make it real for yourself so it can be real for the audience. So in terms of creating horror like this, what scares you, and how do you intend to scare the audience? Because we're in such a world of desensitized people with shock cinema and stuff. So how do you get down to the core of fear?
Well, I don't think I'm a horror director, unfortunately. My next movie is not horror. And I think I exercised my horror demons with Be My Cat. Yeah. And
okay.
Yes. I'm but even with Be My Cat, the horror was like, I think I was more passionate about the meta thing and was more passionate about the movie within the people not knowing what's real and what's fiction, you know, like playing with people's minds, like breaking through their expectations and making people think, you know, like I like to throw because I think society is like so much like used to work with their own preconceived ideas of good and evil and bad. They think they know what is good and what is bad in life and stuff like that. So I like to shake things up, you know, in society. I like to make them reevaluate, re-question their own nature and also the nature of the world, actually, you know. And I tried to a certain extent to do it with Be My Cat. And I don't think Be My Cat is a very personal film, because it started from an idea, from a monologue, you know, the original character and all that. It's something that is far away from me. I made it personal along the way, but the story itself, it's not necessarily the type of story that I would like to tell, you know. So my next movie, We Put the World to Sleep, which is a kind of a sequel to Be My Cat. There will be, I can't tell you what it is, but it is a kind of a half sequel to Be My Cat. In that one, it's like that one, I think will be more personal and more of how I want to scare the world or to shock it or something like that, you know, like to reset people's the way people think and stuff like that. I think that's what I care the most with film. Yeah.
And one thing that we like to do on our show on Real Talk is whenever we're discussing a film, we always like to pick out what we think is the best scene or our favorite scene. And so we want to ask you that question. When you look back at Be My Cat, is there a scene that you would consider as your favorite or one that you thought is the best scene in the movie?
It's so hard to look at it objectively. Yes, I think a very intense scene is Flory's yellings in the ceiling. You know, like even when she was yelling at that point, you know, I really felt sick. You know, like I really felt like in a torture scene. You know, mm-hmm. It really affected me while I was acting that thing. That was intense emotionally. In terms of my moments, I think there is a good moment when Sonia is on the bed and he's talking to Anne, with Sonia being in the back, saying like, "Anne, do you hear me?" And there's a crescendo there. It's a long monologue. He goes further and further and further and further and further up to changing the world and stuff like that. I think that's a good moment for me in terms of both. I think one of the best acting moments, I would say, for me in the film. And also now in terms of kind of classical directing, the way people view it, you know, as a horror movie and stuff like that. I've seen like the scenes towards the end with Alexandra were kind of appreciated. And I think that thing, the fact of her taking the camera, there is a moment when she takes the camera and she is shaking. And you understand that she's shaking by the camera shaking, you know. Mm-hmm. That was not directed. That was so good on her that she, while improvising that thing, she had the intuition to shake her hand, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That gives a very interesting style to that scene towards the end. But I wouldn't say that there is a scene in the movie that is like, oh, my favorite, or because, yeah, like I would say that most of them, they are like, I wouldn't say that there are peaks and moments that are not so good. I would say there are small peaks and small, like small ups and small downs, in my opinion, my very subjective opinion. I cannot be objective towards my own movie, you know, mm-hmm. But as much as I can, I think it's kind of on the same line in terms of, that's my opinion. Yeah, anyway, I don't know what else to say.
Well, no, I appreciate that answer. And for me, there's a couple of scenes in the movie, and I'm like Jay, I'm a horror guy. I love, you know, horror movies, probably my favorite genre overall. And there's two scenes in the movie, and I've seen the movie twice now. Rewatched it again, and the chloroform
scene. I'm really flattered
scene,
by this. Thank you.
You're welcome. The chloroform scene, and then the operation scene that you were just talking about. Both of those were hard watches for me, honestly, because of the realism of it. And again, that is just a testament to what you were able to do. And so it's hard to say that I like really like those scenes or they were my favorite. But again, whenever a movie is able to move you to some type of emotion, those are the movies that I really gravitate towards. And so those scenes move me to be a little bit disturbed or a little bit, you know, upset. And I was like, this is great filmmaking. And so that would be mine. And the
I know the chloroform scene is appreciated by a lot of people. I was never touched by that scene because I knew it's not chloroform there, and I didn't chloroform the
head. Good enough.
Well, Wes, if I may just chime in on this, I think personally one of Adrian's greatest challenges in this film is to go from this smiling character, he's always smiling and pleasant, to where it starts to turn and you get the sense as an audience that he's troubled. And Adrian, I think that's done very effectively, and this is my favorite sequence, is in the toward the beginning with Sonia, when he's giving her contradictory instructions. I cannot get closer than 1 meter to you, but that's, you are not allowed to run from me. And that is amazing, because you really get inside the actress's head, and you're like, yeah, what he's telling her is impossible because he's allowed to run, and she's trying to explain it to him, and he is so unreasonable. That is my favorite sequence.
That's just so funny. That is inspired from the actual acting exercises that are done. You know, sometimes you are given something, you take, you need to, of course, not to that level, probably. Like, I don't know, you need to reach your goal. Let's say you receive an let me tell you in a different way. Let's say you have an acting scene, you and a partner, okay, and you need to convince your partner to go out with you, or to fall in love with you, or something like that, or to start a relationship, you know. And the students are trying that exercise, but they cannot forget about the fact that they are being watched, that they are acting, you know. They cannot fully engage with their partner because they're constantly thinking, oh, but I'm acting now, their audience is, you know, their mind is constantly being disturbed by this. And because of that, the acting teacher would give us a difficult acting team. Okay, you need to convince your partner to go out with you while you need to clean the house. I don't know. And the teacher would just go and throw some, I don't know, like buy a box of biscuits and literally throw on the floor. So they say, okay, the scene lasts like 10 minutes. I want for you to convince your partner while cleaning every biscuit on the floor, you know. I can't see any biscuit left. And this, the actor doing that thing, because he's so much focused on fixing that practical thing, he forgets about acting, about the fact that he's acting, you know, and he forgets that he's watched by an audience, you know. So I was actually inspired by that. I just pushed it to my own my character's crazy.
It's brilliant.
Jason, so mad at you right now. I have an ongoing joke with Tommy on our podcast where I steal his stuff, and that was the scene I was gonna say, because
sorry.
For the exact reason that you said, you go from being a nice person to just freaking that lady out, and it seems so genuine. Like, that lady seems genuinely freaked out.
Yeah, but that was the purpose. That was the purpose, because I was also trying to, okay, I'm going to tell you something. It was not just my character trying to do crazy stuff. It was also me as a director. I was trying to get some strong performances from the actors, you know?
Yeah.
And pushing something like that is so hard to achieve, obviously would pose difficulties to the actor, you know. And when you are in a difficult situation, you cannot act anymore, you know. You can't be fake anymore, because you have an actual issue that you have to solve, you know, in that moment, you know. And she knew that she has to solve it, because I told her. I told Sonia, like, when my character, the crazy director, will give you indications, you cannot pretend that you are solving them. You actually have to solve them for real, you know? So I told her this. So she was actually trying to solve that. And that really kind of works in the same way that the acting exercise works in the acting class, you know? Like, it forces you to really go through a process of really getting crazy and mad and not acting anymore or something like that. Like, I wanted to the things that we do to remove any possibility also of actors their mind slipping away, you know. And and not being fully there, you know, so I wanted to push them a little bit. Yeah.
No, it was very convincing. I'm actually convinced that she's the lady that blocked you on Facebook after that scene. She probably went ahead and did that and doesn't talk to me.
No, she's not.
No, she did a great job.
Yeah, it was a weirder though. First one, Sonia, it was just me and her, you know, and it was a little bit creepy for her. Yes. Just to be with me, that scene when she calls the police, you know, that was her. That was really during the improvisation. She called the police for real. Probably. I'm not sure if you know about this. That's an interesting thing, because yes. I told her that, when I told her this, like when my characters, I just told you, like when my character gives you instructions, you need to really respect those instructions for real. Okay. So during improvisation, my character told her character, because, you know, my character and her character, they were playing again characters, you know, because it's movie within movie within movie. So yeah. My character told her character, you need to reject me for real, you know. And when she was trying in different ways to reject my character, either by insulting me, by calling me this, you are ugly or disgusting. And when she saw that is not working, like literally Sonia for real called the police and totally unexpected surprised me, because that she thought that would be the ultimate way to totally reject me.
Oh, wow.
Well, what did you say to the police?
Well, the police was very understanding, literally, like we explained, and the guy was totally even completing our words. So I understand, like her in character, she became so intense to the point of really feeling the need to make the call and all that. Like the police, the officer was like explaining me about acting and stuff. Like I said a little bit and then he was continuing. He was either in, I don't know, like trying to make me know that he understood, that he gets it, you know. It
was refreshing and concerning simultaneously that the police officer believed you.
Because the moment he came, also Sonia, she came and said, "Oh, sorry for calling you." And also,
okay.
Yes, she didn't. She didn't continue. I was a little bit worried.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Because either because we will get a fine, because the budget was very little. We didn't. Thanks God, they only give us a warning for calling 112 is the equivalent of 911 for no reason. They just gave a warning, but I was actually worried that she might continue when the police comes. And I was not ready psychologically to go to local jail in character. And too much.
do you still keep up with those actresses? Do you talk regularly with them? Have you remained friends? What's that relationship?
We interact very little. I mean, there is very little. Unfortunately, now the movie makes very little money, you know, because kind of years passed and not too many people are buying it anymore. So from time to time, I'm sending them like a couple of dollars, like literally a couple of dollars. Like we don't make any more money almost from the film. I'm hoping to restore this I'm just about to launch the DVD and the Blu-ray.
Awesome.
Through Amazon Media On Demand. Again, I'm doing this very indie. I'm launching it myself. I'm creating the file, sending it to Amazon Media On Demand, and they will release it via Amazon. So practically, they have that thing. The DVD has been approved already. There is a problem, like 4 weeks, there is a problem with my Blu-ray file. The Amazon doesn't accept it, and also they don't tell me what's wrong. They constantly say, oh, we need to please wait more, please be patient. Stuff like that. So I'm patient, but DVD.
If you will, then on your next movie, if you come back to the Nashville Film Festival, I'm going to buy that Blu-ray. And if you will, would you autograph that for me? I'll bring it down to you and say hello, and you autograph my Blu-ray copy and be my cat.
Of course. I can. Like, that's like no problems. Like, come say hello. We have a discussion. Like if I'm free enough, maybe we can even have a beer. I'm not into the. I want to be close to people, close to the fans. I want to be up there as a whatever celebrity or something like that. Of course, when probably things get harder when you have lots of fans, then you cannot be close to everybody. But right now, thankfully, I think I can.
Nice. Yes. So, Adrian, another question about the film. There's a point where, and in fact, it's right after the first murder occurs. You're walking along and you find a dead cat on the ground. Was that dead cat planted or was it just an awesome coincidence?
Oh, my God. Like, can you believe the coincidence? Unbelievable. Like, I was literally walking, improvising, talking about my cat in character. You know, that the character that the cat that my character killed, you know, I'm avoiding lately. For some time, we were even advised or during acting when we talk, sometimes I used to talk like, oh, the cat that I killed, and actually I refer to me as the character, you know? But now I'm avoiding to talk like this anymore after I saw that some people literally think that I'm the character. It's crazy. I don't want that. It's too crazy, too much. Anyway, so yeah, so my character, not me. was talking about killing his cat and all that. And while I was improvising that, literally when he was talking about that, I stopped and there was that cat that was killed by the cars on the side of the road. And I live in a...
That's serendipitous. That reminds me, and Gabe, I bet you can attest to this, that reminds me in Jaws when there are the shooting stars happening overhead. That's like actually captured on the camera. Like, that's so serendipitous. I love it.
Yeah, that's a great thing, Jay. Good call out.
Just a second. What shooting stars?
Shooting in the movie Jaws.
Yeah, during the movie Jaws. Yeah. There's
I didn't get the term shooting stars in English, what it means. Now I understand. The falling stars, you mean, right? The
one that falls. Yes.
Ah, okay.
Yes.
so interesting. I didn't know about that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, Jay, that's in the, well, they're in the boat towards the end, right? You can kind of see it while they're doing like that wide shot of the boat. Right. And I never even noticed it until I read that and I saw that one time. I was like, oh, that is so cool.
A testament to you is people think you're that character because you acted it so good. I almost, before the show started, I wanted to be like, Adrian, you're not shooting a movie about like your obsession with some podcaster, are you? Because I have a family. I have a 2 and a 5-year-old. I don't want you to murder us. Like, I almost got off with that because it was so convincing. But
well, no, thank you. Thank you so much. I'm also taking it as a compliment, like, but I don't know. I think I reached a point in which, I don't know. Like, I find it, I don't want people to think. I think a lot of people that watch the movie, they assume that I might be a little bit, if not like that character, I might be a quarter of the character. Or still, I might be a guy that might be difficult in a certain way, you know, in life to be around. You know, some people assume that. And it kind of hurts me to know that because I'm not at all like that. I'm like so open and like, like I would like to talk to those people. Like, I wouldn't like people to avoid me, like somebody that watched my movie. I wouldn't like them to literally avoid me. Like, maybe they might feel like, saying like, hi, I watched your movie, I loved it. And then I would love to say back, oh, thank you so much. And I really appreciate it and stuff. I wouldn't like them to keep themselves from connecting with me and discovering how I am just because they imagine that, oh, what if he's a complicated person?
Yeah. And Adrian, I think, you know, kind of building off that, I kind of feel what you're saying because in the movie, it is so realistic, but I didn't get that sense that was you. Like, I never thought while watching it, well, that is Adrian. He really is that person. I think it's just a great, great acting job.
No, really, yeah, that's what I meant. I awesome thought it was job. Such a great character and an extension of that character. I say that jokingly, but I just thought it was a great character.
Just a second. What I said right now, it was not as a reply to what you said of you. I get it. I get it how people... this is not a criticism, actually, of the people... thinking this way. I get why people might think this way. You know? I just feel like it's a, I need to convince too many, maybe anyway, but you know what? I don't know. Maybe if they will make an interview with on those talk shows with in the US in the late night shows or whatever they are called, you know, with me and Anne Hathaway, then everybody will learn that.
And Adrian,
I'm a cool guy.
Building off that, you know, like I said, and I know I've already said that, but it really is a credit to the film. You know, I think it's a credit to how well done it is that people could even get that idea that, wow, that is that person real? I mean, I think it's just such a well done, so well executed in that way.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for this. And this all this praise that I'm hearing about Be My Cat makes me so afraid about my next movie. Oh my God. With my next movie, I took so many risks. I can't even tell you the amount of risks that I took with that film. And I went into such directions. Oh my God. I'm really afraid that I'm afraid that I will disappoint people, or I don't know. I'm so afraid to even now I'm working on editing that film, and the editing process is being slowed down because I'm literally afraid of me finishing and releasing this film, my next film. You know, I'm so much fear related to it.
You saying that makes me so excited. When does it come out?
I don't know. I'm still working on it. I have much more footage shot for that one. Like for Be My Cat, I shot 25 hours of footage. For that, I shot 100 hours, almost 100 hours of footage. On top of that, it will be the footage from Be My Cat also used. On top of that, personal, private footage from all my entire life. So, so much editing to do. By the way, I hate editing. Yeah, so I have when I edited Be My Cat, by the way, I remember something about sacrifices and stuff like that, because you were talking about I think you said about sacrifices. I would definitely not suggest doing the type of sacrifice that I did. It's too much, I would say, and it's not worth it when it really can mess up with your head. For example, I could take living in character. I could take then all this work that I did and the stress. What I couldn't take and literally broke me psychologically was the editing process, because I worked myself like hell, like not sleeping. I was obsessed with getting the best edit, so much footage and stuff like that. Constantly not sleeping, night after night, constantly rolling my sleeping cycle. And because of all that stress and all that work on editing, I, for the first time in my life, I had this anxiety crisis, and it still messed up with my brain to a level that I still have anxiety today about some things, you know. So I would say do sacrifices, but be with filmmaking, but do not push yourself in that sense, like they say, sleepless nights and stuff like that. Try to have a discipline of sleep, take some rest, you know, because then it can take really a toll on you and it's not worth. I mean,
I think
if you want to do a movie, don't do as much sacrifice as I did. And it's not necessary, actually. It's not I could have done half the sacrifices that I did and still have the same film and probably even more successful, because I might have been even my mental health might have been even better afterwards, to better take care of festivals and stuff like that and not be so much with depression and anxiety because of all this crazy work, you know. Mm-hmm. So keep it healthy still. Yeah,
I just have one last question, and then if the rest of the panel has a question as well, that ask away. But you know, your new movie, I believe, is called We Put the World to Sleep, and it's going to be part of a meta cinema trilogy along with Be My Cat. And then you have another one planned after We Put the World to Sleep. And I just wanted to ask, I know you can't tell us a lot about the movie yet and stuff like that, but is there anything that you can tell us about this world that you're creating, and what can we be on the lookout, you know, for in the future from you?
Ah, Yeah, so We Put the World to Sleep is about two guys that are working on a movie, like two lovers that are working. It's actually me and my wife. She's an actress as well. So they're working on a movie about ending the world. And while working on that movie, they get lost into their characters and they decide to end the world for real and to use the budget of the movie to end the world for real. And for the rest of the people in both in the team and also for the rest of the world, they use the making of the movie as cover for their new purpose of ending the world, you know? So they when they go to do some research about nuclear weapons or something like that, they say, hey, we are working on an apocalyptic film, therefore it's justified for us to do this research. But they are actually looking for real means to end the world. And they want to end the world. There are a lot of paradoxes here. They actually want to save the world. They realize that all the suffering in the world is inevitable because it's connected to life itself, because life evolved via natural selection, via conflict, via suffering. So the very basic fact that we are alive is due to suffering. Therefore, suffering will never end in the world unless you end life and you bring back the universe to its initial peaceful, senseless state where there was nobody to feel pain because there was no life. So in order to remove pain, so there are these very paradoxical characters that they want to save. They want to do the ultimate good to the world by ending it, by bringing kind of the ultimate bad, you know? And that's the story. But the movie goes meta in... It's like the mother and the father and the grandfather of meta. And I don't know, like, it will go meta like crazy, this film. I'm really questioning if some... Will people like it or only like extra intellectual people will like it and the other ones will be like, okay, I get it. It's like movie within movie. I don't want to say too much. but the meta structure and the movie within movie structure will it's crazy what I did with this one. And also in terms of conflict, It's crazy in narrative structure. It's crazy what I did with. I experimented a lot. And the way I shot it with Be My Cat, I had a bigger structure. With this one, it was a more free improvisation, you know, like not so much control as if in Be My Cat. I was like literally pushing the limits of filmmaking, literally, of what it means to shoot a film, literally, with this one. And, there will be political stuff as well in it. There will be real footage of Biden, of Trump, of maybe even Bernie or Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez or even Assad, Syria's president. Or there will be connections to Be My Cat, very strong connections, actually. I can't say which type, you know, because it's a kind of a half sequel to all this. So it gets so metaphysical and meta, so mind bending, and I don't know. I don't know if it's too much what I did with this one. I don't know. Maybe it's too much. I don't know. We will see. We will literally see it.
I mean, I'm sold. I don't know about you guys, but I'm like it really anticipating this.
Yeah, that was it. You sold it good. I'm ready.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and the third one in the trilogy will be Dr. Frankenstein, and only then kind of the it will be like the entire circle will end, and actually the same way you are left in Be My Cat with questions unanswered, the same way you will at the end of the movie, because you don't know what happened to this guy and stuff like that, the same way you will be left in We Put the World to Sleep with okay. This is not a spoiler, actually. I can say it because everything makes sense in the bigger trilogy. You know, I mean, you will be left with questions unanswered that will be answered in Dr. Frankenstein, I think, in the last part of the trilogy. That being said, there will be questions answered in We Put the World to Sleep. There will be questions both questions answered about Be My Cat, but there will be actually even more questions asked about Be My Cat. So both things, literally. Like, and all the, like, I am literally trying to question the nature of reality itself. Like, go way beyond what I did in Me My Cat in terms of questioning reality. What is real and what is not real, after all, and going to metaphysical realm. And and We Put the World to Sleep will be a kind of a return to horror, by the way. So Be My Cat was this. Sorry. Dr. Frankenstein will be a return to horror.
Okay.
We Put the World to Sleep is a departure from horror, but still strongly connected to Be My Cat and to the story and everything. And Dr. Frankenstein will be a return. It's like the completion of the circle. And so this trilogy in the end might be like kind of, I might feel at the end that I've said everything that I had to say about cinema and life and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I, after this, I might take a new direction. I remember at some point in acting school, there was some, not in acting school, I did some very small filmmaking, a very short filmmaking class I took, something like a couple of weeks or something like that. And I remember somebody was telling us about the director, a Polish director, Krzysztof Kieślowski, I think. I'm not sure if it's true or not, but he said something like, oh, the guy, he did some movies, and after that he said something like, oh, there's no point for me to make new other movies because I've already said everything that I had to say. So everything from now on will be like just me doing something forcefully, you know, it will be like, will lack the actual art or whatever. And I think I might feel something like that. And I might make the transition to making documentaries after this trilogy. I have this feeling. I'm not sure though. Yeah, so I think that's the next step, because I think also as a filmmaker, I'm in search of truth. I'm in search of reality, as you could see from Be My Cat. So even questioning reality, it's still, I'm because questioning reality, that is what it does. You are searching for truth. What is the absolute truth actually in life, you know? And I think you can understand this from me also from, by the way, We Put the World to Sleep, started as a combination between 2001 A Space Odyssey and Blair Witch Project. Because I thought I wanted to do a movie that is in terms of metaphysics and philosophically as challenging as 2001 A Space Odyssey, but as realistic as the Blair Witch Project, using the found footage format, to combine this metaphysics stuff with the realism of found footage. Because I think that found footage as a style and mockumentary and stuff like that, I think really has bigger potential beyond horror. And I don't know why people are not using it this way more, actually, you know, because of the realism, people can empathize more. So if you could empathize, imagine you say, oh my, like I saw even your reactions or reactions of other people that watched the movie. It's like, oh my God, like, this guy is crazy, you know. You really feel like empathy, like thinking this is real, you know. You get engaged that level, that personal level. So imagine seeing a movie like a found footage or a mockumentary and empathizing to that personal level to, I don't know, instead of the revelations of the psychopath, imagine empathizing, I don't know, to the revelations of Einstein or Beethoven, you know. Imagine having this experience, like feeling like all these greater things in life, you know, not only horror, you know. So I tried to do that with Put the World to Sleep. I'm not sure if I succeeded, but I tried. So I'm constantly looking for this type of truth. So I'm thinking after doing this, I might arrive at the conclusion that, okay, the next level to touch truth is to actually do a documentary. I mean, you can't go more truth than that.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, the last thing I had for Adrian is I was just going to say, if I may, I'd like to give you, if you haven't seen these films yet, I have two film recommendations I just think you'd enjoy after talking to you here. They're both from 2008. And the first one is with Philip Seymour Hoffman. It's Senectadoche, New York. I can never pronounce it right. Senectadoche, New York.
I think you're close. I think that's it.
I had it at some point. I had it at some point in my watch list, I think, but I didn't watch it. Yeah.
Okay. I think you'd enjoy that because of what we've been talking about. And the other one is an Anne Hathaway film. It's actually my favorite role of hers, and it's Rachel Getting Married. She's amazing.
I've seen it.
Okay, good. All right. That's all I have.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for the recommendations. Yes. I will re-add to my watch list this Senectadoche, New York.
Thank you.
But I like, oh my God, like so many movies now I have in my watch list. And lately I didn't watch movies anymore lately. I don't know. I got so much stressed with filmmaking and all so many things in life. I didn't have time for movies anymore. Hopefully I will have time at some point for movies and the psychological state to watch movies again. Yeah.
Gabe, T-Man, anything else for Adrian while we've got him?
Adrian, no, the last thing I was just going to say is, of course, thanks for joining us. I mean, I thought this has been a lot of fun, and it exposes our audience to, you know, a different type of film that I don't know if they've had experience of watching before. And if they enjoy that film, and Adrian, I don't know if you've seen these films, kind of jumping off what Jay said, a couple of films that are actually very similar to your film is one is Man Bites Dog, which is a really famous early 1990s kind of a comedy serial killer type film that's kind of in the same vein as this. And then another one is Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, which is from the 1980s. Yeah, that's the one that reminded me the most of your film, just how realistic it was. And Michael Rooker, of course, great actor. You know, a lot of people thought he was that character for a long time. He talked about that, how he got typecast in that role. So I thought that was a very similar type thing, kind of falls into the same conversation we had today. But yeah, thanks so much for joining us. And I really look forward to your next films and hope you can join us again.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And yeah, I wish I got typecasted as well, but nobody offered me anything so far. So I think if I was probably in the U.S., at least in England, I think I would have gotten some parts in some indie horror productions. But being in Romania, I think too little things being made. And for example, I had this international success with Be My Cat, but at the same time, locally in the film community, I'm not like I can't say that. That people care about what I did locally in the film community, you know, probably because I did it so much out of the system, you know, like not using the classical companies, the state support. I'm not in their group of the official filmmakers of Romania. You know, it's totally a guy randomly coming out of his a small town doing these things. Like everybody was like, "What the fuck? Like, yeah. Where did this guy come from?
Where did he come from?" But you're following your own path, and I think it sounds like you're keeping that path going, and I think you can still be successful in that way, and I think you have success ahead of you also.
Oh, thank you so much. I really, really wish and hope. And by the way, I also want to mention something, like if somebody looks here and wants to watches this and watches Be My Cat, or some people who are going to hear this thing, this or fans, like if they want to help in any way, all this endeavor, I have a Patreon page that I opened recently. So practically there, I'm trying to get support during all these months, because there's the way I'm working, you know, not having a script, you know, and constantly developing, shooting, long months of shooting, long months of editing and building the story in post-production. It's literally impossible for me to find big companies, big investors without a script, you know? It's a very indie and long struggle and lots of hours of work. And because of that, I can't even have like a second job or anything like that, you know? So financially, that's the biggest issue for me right now, you know? So I launched that Patreon page. So I'm thinking this can save me. This can literally allow me to finish this trilogy, you know, because if I get a monthly thing from that Patreon, then I can focus on filmmaking without the fear of, oh my God, what am I going to eat tomorrow? It's so hard. Yeah. And also there are all kinds of perks there on that Patreon page. Like people get thanks credits in the movie, up to producer credits, they can even give feedback about how the movie should be edited, literally. So there are a lot of kinds of funny stuff for people that can help and stuff like that. Yeah.
What you said about making a movie was really an inspiration. I hope anybody that listened to this podcast really takes inspiration from what you did. And if you haven't seen Be My Cat, please check it out. It's a fantastic movie. Support Adrian in any way you can. I look forward to your upcoming stuff, man. I cannot wait. You know, you were concerned that we would maybe not be excited, but the more you described it, the more I want to watch it. But I don't have anything else, man. It was a great interview. I enjoyed the time.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Me too. Yeah. And by the way, on that, Be My Cat is available mainly in North America, and I think maybe in the UK on Amazon. In a lot of countries, it's not available on Amazon, but it is available worldwide on my Patreon page for a donation of minimum $1. So if for whoever listening from any other country around the world, $1, just watch it on Patreon. And on top of that, you get extra footage and all kinds of other stuff that will be included on the DVD. And also on the Blu-ray, awesome. Will include like 12 or 13 minutes of extra footage. But in case you cannot afford the DVD or the Blu-ray, again, for $1, you have the, on Patreon, you have the extra footage there as a perk.
And Adrian, how do you get to that page that you're referencing? Because I'd love to go to that page.
It's patreon.com/my name. I don't know, like... Can send you a link, but not now because I can't.
Sure. Yeah.
Yep. We will put those links in the show notes. That way, anybody listening to this, we will put your website, we'll put your Patreon page, we'll put those in the links.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I will send you then the link separately to my Patreon. Yes.
All right. Well, Adrian, it has been such a pleasure having you on the show. It really has. And as I think one of the other guys said, you know, whenever you become a big director, don't forget about our little podcast here. Come back and talk to us. Let us know what's going on. We'd love to have you on again. And you've already told a little bit the listeners how they can keep up with you and kind of continue your projects. But last thing I want to do, I want to throw it back over to my buddy Jay over here and just say, Jay, thank you for joining us. Again, you've been an inspiration to me, and it was an honor having you on. We would love to have you back so you can talk about movies with us sometime. We'll do an episode. We'd love to have you back here anytime.
Absolutely. It would be an honor. And I'd want to thank you too, Wes, and I want to thank Tommy and Gabe and Adrian. It was an honor to finally get to speak with you. You know I love your film. I've been telling people about it for years. It makes a great conversation piece. And as soon as I can purchase it on video, it's going to be in my collection. So when people come over, I'll be like, have you ever seen this? but yeah, anytime I will be here on Real Talk, you let me know. It would be an honor. So thank you for having
me. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And thank you for all the support for Be My Cat that you did so far, telling to everybody about it. Like, yeah, and I was telling you, Wes, we had a test testing the video some days ago to see if the internet connection is good. So I was telling to Wes, like, how important it is to us, the little indie filmmaker, for people to learn about us, this exposure, this type of thing. It's like, it's literally everything, actually. It's literally everything. You know, we are, marketing, it's like, doesn't matter. You can have a masterpiece. If it's not seen, if you do not have the means to reach an audience, you don't do anything, literally. You don't do anything. It's essential. It's essential. Yeah. Thank you so much. Wonderful. And I definitely, as you said, like, I'm a guy like, hopefully I won't be, like, there are two hopes. First hope is hopefully I will become I don't want to become like extremely rich and having billions and stuff like that, but just becoming having enough money to be afford a decent living and not be afraid for, oh my God, how am I going to pay the rent next month or next year? You know, I just want to be able to have the time without the stress of life to be able to make more movies, you know, to make more art. You know, that only that level of reach I want in life, you know, to not stress about other things in life, to have this freedom. And the second hope is like, oh, like hopefully when I reach there, I don't know, when I will have like, I don't know, like hopefully like a couple of millions of dollars or something like that. Hopefully this will not affect me like psychologically to kind of, as you said, like to forget about the where I came from and the people that helped me in the beginning. But I don't think money and power can corrupt people, actually. For example, sorry if I'm prolonging this, I just want to say something short. I was actually talking to my wife these days, and for example, sometimes on Facebook or with authorities, I become very, very, very like complaining, you know? Like when I see injustice in society, I'm complaining, or I'm putting something on Facebook and I'm tagging people with the risk of creating enemies or something like that. And I've been told things like, oh, like it's good to do these things actually when you are bigger, when you have more power, because now you don't have enough money. It's hard for you right now. So be a rebel a little bit later when you are strong enough, you know, because now these people that you criticize, they can crush you if they want, much easy. But you know what's my idea? I think that once you get there at the top, and you're okay, you find it's less probable that you will care the way you care when you are now, when you are little.
Yeah.
So I actually think that you need to do it now. You need to care about the little people and the injustices in society now, when you suffer yourself this injustice, when it's personal to you, because now you will fight the most for it.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get there at the top, even if mentally you still want to do the right thing in the world, because it's not your ass on the line, you can't fight fully, you know? You can't fight fully from there at the top. You know, you can't fight fully for that's the problem with politicians, even with the most leftist ones, you know, like no matter how much they say they care for the little people, once they have the millions in their bank account, their ass is secure. You know, they are not in danger of being evicted. So they will say that, oh, I'm fighting for them, but they will not fight us really. So because of that, I think it's good for I'm trying to fight now as much as possible. Because I'm afraid that when I am powerful, when I have money, I'm afraid that I will be a little bit corrupted. And I think human nature is corruptible. It's so corruptible.
No. Very well said.
This dark philosophy right now, I just felt like saying it. Yeah.
Our audience, that's all we have for this episode of Real Talk. It's been, again, such a pleasure talking with Adrian and having Jay on. And again, in the show notes of our episode, we're going to put some links both to Jay and Adrian, how you can continue to keep up with them. And so for us, that's a wrap.